Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hey, this is Trevor from Halifax calling in to say that I support Creative Control on Patreon because I think long-form arts journalism is a crucial part of music culture and there's simply not enough of it out there today. Vish is a master interviewer, he lands great guests, and he has his finger on the pulse of the ever-changing music landscape both here in Canada and abroad. For all of these reasons and many more, I think you should support Creative Control on Patreon too.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today. I'm Visha's wife, and I will love him no matter what you do. And now he has me on the record saying that.
Nels Klein is a tremendously gifted musician who currently calls upstate New York home. If not the world's greatest guitar player, Klein is definitely in the top two for that category. After decades spent blowing people's minds in the realms of jazz, punk, improvised music, every other recognized genre, and as a member of the inventive Chicago rock band Wilco, Klein tends to more than a few of his own bands and musical configurations. And at some point, he recently assembled the Nels Klein Singers to create a remarkable new album called Share the Wealth, which is available worldwide on November 13th, 2020, via Blue Note Records. Nels returns to this show to discuss his hopes that the 2020 U.S. election does not result in an unfair or disputed contest. Relocating recently with his wife, the gifted musician and home recording enthusiast, Yuka C. Honda, how much he misses seeing live and improvised music, how jazz fusion, tropicalia, and psychedelic sounds influenced Share the Wealth, future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol and Massey Hall's concert film series live at masseyhall.com, where you can stream dozens of 30-minute films for free, including performances by past podcast guests like Bahamas, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. This is the 579th episode of Creative Control, featuring your friendly neighborhood, Nels Klein, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Nels. How's it going?
Well, Vish, it's been an interesting year. It's basically going well in spite of everything. And I haven't seen you in a long time. You look really different. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm okay. Did you know that you wouldn't know this, obviously. I moved to Edmonton, Alberta with my family.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I did not know this.
Well, I meant to send you a postcard and I forgot. I'm sorry. We moved at the end of December. And, big move, obviously. And then everything went to hell. And so now, yeah, in terms of the look, I have a thing going on. I got a beard. It's,
you do.
Don't you know other people growing things out just because they can?
Or, yeah.
Do you have other friends?
Seen Bill Frisell lately? Seen that? Seen his beard?
I have not. No. So, yeah.
He's got a beard.
Have you ever had a beard?
No. I had an almost beard when I had adult chicken pox many years ago.
Oh, right.
And in fact, it was a Wilco tour. A few gigs had to be postponed because I couldn't shave for about 2 weeks. And I had, scabs all over my face. And I landed in Calgary, Alberta, to start the tour once I was no longer contagious and deathly ill. And, a scabby face, 2 weeks of beard growth, and no one blinked. They didn't stop me and question me or anything. I was amazed. But no, I'm not really a beard guy. I did, at the beginning of all this, not cut my hair for quite a while. So I had a bit of a hair helmet after about almost 6 months of not cutting it. But then you could cut my hair because I had to do things like this. It was time to look respectable again.
You look very nice. I think your hair is very nice. You did a great job, if I might
thank
say.
You. Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. Hey, Vuka Vicious really likes the haircut.
So where in the world are you, Nels? I normally ask people that, and we're remote here. Where are you?
Well, I am in Delhi, New York.
Delhi, New York. Whereabouts is that?
It's in Delaware County.
In relation to Manhattan. Let's go with that. Is it like
about 3 hours plus?
Oh,
north.
Oh, you're like in upstate New York.
Truly upstate.
Truly upstate, and that's how long have you been there?
It's snowing right now here.
Oh,
well, we started into another place further north near Oneonta, sort of. It was northeast of Oneonta, and now we've been here for a couple of months. We're just kind of in this temporary zone. Our stuff's in storage. It's interesting.
Is this because of the pandemic that you've left the city?
It's a confluence of various elements, but certainly that is the catalyst.
Hmm.
It sort of accelerated what may have been, predictable on some level. Maybe we would have ended up here a few years later than we are now.
Yeah.
But now we're here.
It's a lovely part of the country, upstate New York. It's not mountains, but it's hill. Actually, there are some mountains, aren't there? There's hilly,
yeah.
Like hills and like.
We're in the Catskills. In the Catskills, and it's extremely beautiful. I have to say, it's very, very beautiful. It's breathtaking.
Is it conducive to music making and collaboration? I know right now that whole idea and notion is probably very complicated. But yes. Do you feel like, is there a little community of musicians near you? Or do you
No.
No.
we have two musician friends who are fairly nearby. They're maybe about 25-minute drive away. That up here is close. And that's how we ended up up here. It was actually, we were sort of encouraged gently but firmly by two of our best friends. And so we can collaborate with them sometimes, but mostly it's just me and Yuka and our dog. Oh. And I have done some recording. Yuka's able to record me in a little room that she has set up, and I just overdub. Or we did a live stream on Friday where I played solo guitar and Cup, our duo, played from the living room here. That was quite a production. That was through Ars Nova Workshop in Philadelphia.
Oh, okay.
So there is a certain amount of productivity. I've done some writing, music writing, but ultimately, generally, when this all started, I did not feel driven or productive. I sort of accidentally productive because I was sitting around playing guitar.
Yeah. Yeah, I've talked to a number of musicians who haven't quite felt inspired to write and create during this period. But at the same time, a number of them are catching up on projects they'd shelved, you know, things they just never had the time to do or get around to. I'm sure you have an archive of recordings and live tapes and all sorts of things, I'm guessing. No?
I'm not touching that. I don't address any of that. It's in a big heaps somewhere in a box now in that storage space. But I did get a grant to write and perform music with my Brooklyn-based quartet that I started last year, mm-hmm. which I'm calling the Concentric Quartet. So I kind of accidentally wrote about 12 pieces for this quartet. When we can perform it is a whole other story, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But and in the meantime, the singer's record is coming out, and I've spent the last couple of months doing mostly non-musical activities related to that, like talk online or oversee video production or package design and things like that, you know, and that's gone well.
That's good. Yeah. The new record is a gorgeous one. We will talk about it. It's called Share the Wealth, correct?
That is the correct title.
Yeah. It's a beautiful record. And before we get to it, I mean, I feel like the title is telling in itself on some level these days. As we're speaking, I want people to know that as you and I are speaking, it is Monday, November 2nd in the year 2020. It's 10:13 Mountain Standard Time. So tomorrow is election day in your country there, Nels. And
yes.
So by the time people hear this, and things could be, hopefully, I think, totally different. I wonder if you can give me, you had alluded to this, like what a weird year it's been. But I'm just wondering if you can give me your perspective on your country as we're speaking right now. What do you make of what has, and I mean that from a pandemic perspective. I mean that from social justice perspective. There's lots going on right now, and it feels all of us, myself included, a Canadian, a little on edge, a little worried about what's coming for all of my friends in America, because no matter what happens tomorrow, I feel like the next few months, years are going to be rough. How are you feeling? How are you feeling?
Well, I'm trying not to, and it's very difficult, I must say. I'm trying not to buy into all the panic that's being dispensed in many media outlets from various perspectives, left, right, middle, whatever. I think there's a lot of uncertainty, but it's being ramped up to almost sort of untenable and extreme proportions, maybe just to keep people watching TV news or reading the news on their phones or whatever. There's certainly going to be some grotesque conflict. And I'm hoping that all the quiet, sensible people vote and that the votes matter and that it's a fair election. I have no idea how anyone can actually assure that at this point. So I'm just hoping that the Patti Smith song rings true and that people really do have the power, and that it's not going to end up being, shall we say, hijacked. I think the amount of polarity that's been fed into the country for the last 4 years is extremely distressing. And I think that it could end up being extremely destructive. If we look at it another way, it could be instructive. And I think that if we look within ourselves and decide what it is we want as a country and start realizing that we have commonalities, we aren't just, you know, while making enemies, we get nowhere. We have to start thinking about what keeps us, well, I don't, do we want a society, you know? And I would like to see a society. That's what a lot of Share the Wealth, the title, has to do with. It has to do with some basic ideas about rethinking the distribution of wealth, for example, and of course, of justice and fairness to all individuals, not just the noisy ones, and not just the beleaguered ones, and not just the jerks. So, yeah, I'm worried, and I don't know what it's going to be like. I'm worried about a lot of the cities because I have friends, most of my friends are in the city, cities all over the country, and those places are potentially going to erupt. And I feel like there are agents in, out there who are going to try to ensure that. And they are they're doing so in a clandestine way. And we have to resist. I think we need to resist this urgent need that's being, we're being told we have this urgent need to change everything tomorrow by whatever means necessary. And I would like people to try to resist this if they can, because I think it's going to end up setting things back pretty far.
You have been living in this country your whole life. You are someone who has traveled throughout this country. I mean, you alluded to the fact that the polarization over the past 4 years has been particularly bad, but for some of us who have been paying attention, like, this is the end result of decades of such polarization, such media fear-mongering and politicians fear-mongering.
Yep.
Do you think what we are going through, and I say we because we all feel part of this, we all feel touched by it, even if we're not Americans, do you feel like this last 4 years is just the byproduct of, you know, decades and decades of sort of behavior?
Yeah, I suppose it is, you know. I mean, it's like many, I guess, very wise religious figures in the Buddhist tradition have trickled down there with my Buddhist friends, the idea that you know, we create these individuals, you know, in our society. They don't just like an island that just shows up to torment us. So certainly, it's definitely the byproduct of a whole legacy of exploitation, discrimination, unfairness. But I think if you focus only on that, it starts to feel hopeless. And I think feeling hopeless is a victory for people who don't have vision for the future that could be fair and just. I really do think that most people want others to be able to survive and thrive and have safety for their families and food and shelter. I really do. I think that that's an innate human characteristic, because after all, we are social animals. We don't exist in a vacuum like this pandemic lockdown vacuum all that easily. We really like proximity, as I do, which is why I like cities and why I like gigs, you know?
Yeah.
So I think as people start to reassess what their real needs are, it'll be interesting to see what surfaces. But I think that it's some scary shit out there.
Yeah, it is. And it's, I don't know, if you're like me, I try to stay informed, but I like being in little vacuums where everything seems great. And, like, you know, I think a lot of us didn't really pay attention to a certain brand of anger that was running through the undercurrent of our daily lives. And so that's where when I mentioned the vacuum thing, and I ask you, like, does this 4 years, was this really that big a shock given everything that's been peddled preceding it? I don't know. I feel like we're not always listening to each other on some level. And at the same time, people who have platforms now maybe shouldn't. Like, it's very confusing. Like, I've mostly just avoided some of this negative, these negative impulses, these selfish impulses. So that's why I ask you if, like, it feels like a surprise, or was it just something we've compartmentalized as, like, well, that's just those people. Yeah. That's all. Like, I guess I'm wondering, particularly as someone who's an improviser, I know you listen deeply to people.
Okay, I'll say two more things maybe at this, and then maybe I'd like to not get, like, this slashingly depressed today.
Yeah,
so,
sorry, Nels. It's just
no, it's okay.
It's the way I am. I'm a gloom and doom guy.
Okay.
No, I'm not. Well, I'm just...
No, I think that it's important to unplug.
Yeah.
Personally, because we're being inundated. I think the 24-hour news cycle and all the lies that come out of that, and it's almost all exaggerated, which is a kind of lie.
Yeah, yeah.
I think if we unplug from that and take care of each other on a local level and take care of ourselves and continue to do our work, if you can muster that, I think that's extremely important. And I think that and that's my second point, is that looking into the mouth of lies, hatred, and panic and disruptions every second of your day is ill-advised.
Yeah,
One's health, because I don't think the people who disseminate this 24 hours a day care about you and me. They just are trying to keep people tuned in.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I try to resist. And it's very difficult. Yeah. Okay. But I'm just saying, I try to resist going to that place where I'm going to just jump off a cliff, you know?
Yeah. I want to, I appreciate you engaging with this stuff. I know it's hard. And as I say, we're on the eve of something weird. So I'm sure your levels of, are kind of high right now, as they are for me. I want to try to see the bright side of what's been going on in terms of our self-isolation. I recently read a book called Mirror Sound. By Spencer Tweedy and Lawrence.
Oh yeah.
And your wife Yukasi Honda there profiled in the book for the studio space, and you alluded to that. I just wonder if you've seen a bright side. I know you're a road dog. You like to play live. You like to tour. Is there a bright side to being a bit more self sufficient? In terms of what Yuka does, like, it sounds like she has made a point of having home studios and being creative at home. I know you said you're doing your best with that stuff, but is there kind of a bright side to that for you to have maybe even Yuka in your life so that you can, if you have an idea, you can go into a space and try to capture it?
Yeah, it's certainly nice to be able to continue playing something.
Yeah.
And also to be, in spite of the strangeness of it, to be reaching people.
Yeah.
I haven't been watching a whole lot of live streams or anything. I know many of my friends who are real fans of music and deep listeners, and they follow it. They've been doing this because it's going to keep them sane. Mm. This is what they appreciate in the world, and it gets them through their day. You know, the irony for me, frankly, is that what I was kind of wishing for before this happened was to, quote unquote, like, get off the treadmill for a couple of weeks.
Meaning
just be home and to be able to have time to learn something new on the guitar or write some new pieces or just, like, make some dinners. I don't know, just something else. And then this happened. And I feel extremely lucky that we have friends who have been so supportive and that we have each other. So yeah, there's an upside to pretty much anything that's creative, where people can have their own activity be honored in some way, either at home or out in the world online or something.
Yeah.
And Yuka's got a really good perspective on that. And it helps me because she has to kind of talk me down sometimes.
Yeah. 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 I wonder about that. Like, this has been a major transition for so many of us to be, I don't know about you, but I mostly stay at home. I get groceries and
that's what we do. But it's kind of what we were doing anyway when we were both home. It's just kind of, I didn't run out to the clubs and, like, go nuts every night or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
I like being able to play, and I was doing a lot of playing in the city as much as was coming along. I was just happy to be doing so many cool things. The real downside is that I have virtually no income. So that's
yeah.
And I never wanted to monetize playing anyway. I just like to play music. So it's not like I ever had a system or an idea of my worth or anything like that. But things were going pretty well there for a while.
Yeah. 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 I'm sorry to hear that. I hope that it's a hardship that you can overcome as soon as possible. For what it's worth, well,
we're doing our best, you know. I mean, it's every time I see all these people, I almost used a pejorative term, like getting together in huge groups without any masks on and whatnot. I just think, well, there goes another 6 months, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Potentially working again, you know. So I'm not super thrilled about that.
Right.
We'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
I think I view those gatherings and those rallies and what concerts that some of these people are putting on, and I think more of the social destruction. I hadn't really contemplated the economic destruction that you're describing. Like, they're actually, yeah, they're going to prolong this situation and damage your infrastructure, our infrastructure. It is horrible. I was just talking to Thurston Moore about this recently, and beyond the notion of him playing or us, you know, being able to go see shows, one of the things I really has hit me and struck me recently is not being able to see opening bands, not being able to see new bands, new musicians. That discovery thing has really got to me. Has that hit you at all? I know you're like, we weren't going out to the clubs that much, but like just seeing new things, because there's this pipeline of stuff. By the way, I ordered your record. I ordered your double vinyl for Share the Wealth, and I'm excited to get it. But I've been ordering more vinyl, and it's coming to the house. I've been like, I'm okay not seeing shows. I can handle it. But as I get now, I'm like, this pipeline is going to stop, and I'm mostly getting things I'm quite familiar with, I would say, for the most part. I'm not like, I don't know about you, but like you see a band, and then you're like, oh, I never heard of this band. They're great. I'm going to buy their stuff. I'm going to follow this band now. Do you miss that? Are you missing that kind of stuff?
Oh, boy. I wouldn't say that I perceive it that way personally. I think that most of the work that I do outside of Wilco, there are no opening bands.
That's true. Yeah.
So I just go play with improviser comrades, and we do our thing, and I go home, you know. But quite often, my friends are playing, say, in Gowanus, and I could just walk there and go hear some of just amazing music that was newly composed by somebody that I am interested in or respect, or somebody I know is in the group. So I just went and checked it out. And I absolutely miss that. And that was one of the absolute joys of living in the city.
Yeah.
And something that was neighborhoody, really, you know. That's a huge loss.
That's an interesting distinction. Thurston said the same thing. He pivoted to improvised music, and the fact that that is something he misses, because even if you know the players, that is a totally, you know, invented thing, and that experience has really got. So it's fascinating that you have the same. Like, that's a very special thing, isn't it? Seeing improvisers.
Yeah, I mean, for example, I did have a multi-band situation before this place Corzo in Brooklyn stopped having shows in their back room. So I was going to play as a guest with my friend Mike Baguette's trio with Jerome Harris and Billy Mintz. And I was just going to play lap steel. But before we were on, Gerald Cleaver had a trio with Brandon Seabrook on guitar and you know, doing some wild, amazing stuff. And of course, like, that was a total joy, even though I couldn't get very close because the place was small and it was really full. Yeah. And it was one of the last nights they were going to have music there. And that was, you know, that, or going to Three's Brewing and hearing, or actually even sitting in with like David Harrington's music, which my wife Yuka would be often participating in, and having these kinds of experiences wherein I was listening as well as playing. And I could, if I didn't have so much gear, I could have walked there for those too.
Yeah.
But yeah, the improvisation aspect of it, but it's just what's going on in our, where we were living, and now it can't happen. You know, to try to take the positive spin, the little things like that will be the first to reemerge because they're smaller gatherings.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's going to be pretty far down on the list for Wilco to figure out how to have gatherings of 1,000 or more people. So I'm just having to bide my time, and you know, I mean, we spent many, many days trying to pack up our stuff. I'm so glad you're getting all this vinyl, because I just packed up probably 2,500 records to put in storage.
Oh my God.
And I just started, I've been carting around my whole life, and I just thought, what the hell is wrong with me? So, hey, just keep buying that vinyl. I don't need any more.
Yeah, oh, I feel like, you know, when I get sent downloads and MP3s and streaming stuff on this Bluetooth speaker I've connected to my computer here, and then I finally get the vinyl copy, and I'm like, yeah, this is the way it's supposed to sound. Like, I put it in.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. So I don't mean to get into that, but I'm trying to be supportive of the musicians I love as well. So, because I've had friends be like, really, the shipping? What about the shipping? It's so crazy. You can't go to the store. I'm like, yeah, I know. It's fine. It's just the way it is. I need to help.
Look, man, I still buy CDs, for Christ's sake, because compact discs, I mean, I never thought I'd be like this defender of the compact disc, but the compact disc is the improviser's friend.
Yes, you know? It's true.
I can travel with them. They play at the right speed. They generally don't skip.
Yeah.
They have no surface noise. And lots of improvisers make small batches of these things, and it's kind of like swap them, trade them, you can just go and inexpensively purchase something. And I get I still get major label stuff too, because I can listen to it easily, although you can't buy a CD player anymore anyway.
No, I don't have one in the house. We have a Blu-ray player, that's about it, and it's weird. Since we moved, I left all the quasi working ones behind. And I'm like, I'll be fine. Like, it's sort of a weird time. Yeah, no, I hear you. Your record, you used the phrase small gatherings a few moments ago, and I was thinking about this iteration of the Nels Klein Singers, because it seems like anything but a small gathering. Tell us about the configuration on Share the Wealth. It's expansive, right? It's a bigger version of the band.
It's the 6-piece version. Yeah, it came about slowly, the idea of expanding the band, to be honest. I've been thinking about it for a long time because, as you're aware, initially when I started the band, which was almost 20 years ago, it was a trio.
Yeah.
And it was with Scott Amendola, who's still playing with the singers, and Devin Hoff was on bass. And Devin was doing this for about 10 years, and then Trevor Dunn came in when Devin was ready to move on to some other musical and life sort of endeavors. And we got asked, or I got asked, to do a large version of the Singers years ago by Michel Levasseur in Victoriaville.
Oh, Festival. Yeah, nice, yeah.
And so Michel wanted me to do an expanded version of the band with at least one woman musician in the band, which was interesting.
They made a point of saying that? Like,
yeah. Oh,
okay, interesting. Yeah.
And I thought, well, in my book, of course, Yuka would be my first choice. So, well, Yuka was unavailable. I think she was in Japan or something. I can't remember if she was on tour with Chivo Mato. I don't know what was happening.
Sure.
But I was, of course, happy to add Zena Parkins. So I got Zena, Brian Marcello, who I'd heard with Ciro Baptista's band, Banquet of the Spirits, and I'd heard play solo when Yuka and I did a duo thing at the Kitchen a few years ago. And he's mind-blowing. And then we had Ciro and Trevor and Scott. And then I added Mark Rebo also on guitar because he was going to be playing with Ceramic Dog at the festival. And I love playing with Mark, and we haven't had that many opportunities to do that.
Yeah.
But we just had a sound check rehearsal and then hit it, and that was that. And so flash forward a few years, I just kind of didn't do anything with the Singers. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I needed a foil. I was tired of being the only treble clef guy, the treble clef voice. And adding Ciro to the band certainly really helped me and helped to refresh the music and kept things colorful and lively and much more fabulous for me. And I think for everyone else who heard us, I hope.
I saw some expanded iteration of this band at the Hillside Festival in Guelph.
I think that was just the quartet with Ciro and Trevor and Scott.
I'm just
and we played with Daniel Lenoir too.
That's
but that
right.
was like that was a jam thing they
right.
set up.
That's right. That was a fun that was a fun weekend for me. I hope
that
you enjoyed
fun.
It.
I think that's the last time I saw you.
Yeah, well, pre beard for sure. Yes, yes, yes. That
yeah,
was
yeah.
a few years ago. Yeah. And so okay.
It was cool. Okay,
yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah.
So I've known Skerrick for I've been aware of him and been friendly with him for probably, I figured I went back in the Wayback Machine in my faltering memory, and I think it's maybe 18 years ago.
Oh, wow.
I first heard Garrick. And he was playing with Crack Sabbath at Bumbershoot in Seattle. And I was there with Mark Isham's Silent Way project.
Okay.
And then Garrick ended up on my radar quite often through Scott Amendola, because we'd be playing up and down the West Coast, and there would be Garrick with one of his bands on the same shows, same festivals, et cetera, et cetera. But it wasn't until last year that I played with Garrick. And they have these things that I've found perplexing, but also have turned out to be really fun for me, which are these after show jams that Phish sponsor or whatever.
Oh.
So I did two of these in the last year or so in the city, in New York. After their Madison Square Garden shows, they have these sort of like, here, if you have this kind of ticket, it gets you into this thing that starts at 12:30.
Oh, like an after show pass, so to speak. Right.
So I guess after 3 hours of Phish, people really want to hear more music. I don't know. I don't see how that's possible, but I did two of these at the Sony Music Hall. And the second one, the first one was with Garrick and Billy Martin and Mono Neon. And we just basically improvised for 90 minutes, 2 hours, until about 2 a.m. or so, 2:30 in the morning.
Hmm.
And the place would be packed. It was completely insane. But playing with Garrick was such a joy, and just hearing how he uses his pedals and this kind of sometimes absolute directness that he has in his playing, that eschews all kinds of frills and arm waving. And we just had a great time playing together. And it was Scott Amendola who told me, like, hey, man, Garrick really loves your music. He's like got all your records, blah, blah, blah.
Oh.
So then the little light bulb went on, and I just thought, and I never thought I would add saxophone to the singers. I went through years where I was burned out on saxophone, to be honest.
Hmm.
At least where my own music was concerned, I always favored clarinet, different kinds of woodwinds. But I just thought, okay, what if I put a version of the singers together, which I was calling the Singers Unlimited, but that couldn't be used because they still exist, I think, the Singers Unlimited.
Oh, right.
The singing group.
Right.
But anyway,
right.
What if, is what I thought. Brian, Ciro, Trevor, Scott, Garrick, and me. Like, what? Let's see what'll happen. So I convened everybody in Brooklyn at this place called The Bunker with my friend Eli Cruz recording us, somebody I had met years and years ago through Scott Amendola, but who Youth and I have worked with extensively. And he did the Cup record with us, and used to live right down the street practically. And we just recorded for a couple of days with a little bit of material that I brought in, did a lot of improvising, and we've never done a gig. But I was listening to the results, and I thought, damn, this came out pretty good. So Eli and I got together and did some editing, and I added a couple of things. I fleshed it out with a couple of things that I recorded later as introductions or links or things like that, and played it for or got it to Don West to listen to, and he said, let's do this. I thought for sure that he would think it was a cool record, but not a Blue Note record. But lo and behold,
nice.
Here it is, a double album.
Yeah, no, it's it's fantastic for sure. I find it interesting that you invoked the saxophone as an instrument that you weren't so keen on maybe in your own work, because I feel like there is some influence here from, I don't know, maybe the weather report, Wayne Shorter. Is that true?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, I can go down the list. It was not intentional, but I mean, to be honest, Vish, the aesthetic, other than the electronic aspect, which is the sort of more technology of today aspect of the record, I mean, everybody's using some kind of electronic manipulation except for Ciro in this band, which is kind of a singer's thing. It's as opposed to, say, I've been asked many times, what differentiates this from the Nels Klein 4 or from this or from that? Well, in that group, I eschewed looping and all kinds of effects pedals and whatnot. And the singers has always been kind of, the full Monty. But the aesthetic and the influences, whatever, it's pretty much the same stuff since I was in high school. I mean, it's all the same. I'm not trying to make a tribute record to the early 70s late 60s, early 70s, the birth of jazz rock or jazz fusion or whatever you want to call it. But that stuff's just in there. It's just the way I play and think. It's the way most of us in the band, if not all of us, are wired, you know? And so as I listen to these improvisations, for example, which I was initially going to do kind of a cut and paste, a collage version of these some certain smaller elements of these, but I just love the way they unfolded and the chemistry that was happening. Certainly I'm thinking, you know, after the fact, like, well, that's a little bit like Odyssey of Ischia, or hey, this kind of reminds me of the first Weather Report album, or it reminds me of, oh my God, I mean, it's just, you know, obviously Electric Miles, which there's a one song called Princess Fun, which is a total intentional nod to Miles of the 70s. And even some to the 80s, like Star People and Decoy. I mean, that I just like that music, and it just comes out that way. And then there's what we might term an indie rock element, which yet another meaningless term, but that's just kind of what the singers do, because that's what I've been writing all this time, is there's that element as well. But the saxophone was always, to me, I was just tired of the sound, I think, and the way a lot of saxophone is utilized in music, and it has nothing to do with the quality of players that are out there. My quartet in Brooklyn has Ingrid Laubrock playing saxophones, and so I'm back into the saxophone, man.
What about?
I'd like to mention, though, that, you know, what Skerrick does is he can do, with his effects pedals and stuff, he can do things that will not make one think of the sound of a saxophone. And he does it without a kind of, it's not just tacked on, you know what I mean? It's part of his language. And so that works beautifully in my world and Scott's world and Ciro's world and Brian's world.
Well, one of the things that sticks out for me when I think of Electric Miles or Wayne Shorter or the term you invoked, fusion, is that notion of instrumentation that it sounds familiar, but it also sounds like it's in disguise or something. It sounds like it's being manipulated or it's being altered. That appeals to you, obviously. That's interesting to me, because saxophones are fairly distinct. Like, they sound like saxophones, but with the manipulation, you get this whole new texture. And I wonder if that's what draws you to these kinds of sounds, the notion that they are alien, or they are, maybe their foundation is traditional, if you will, but they become these alien tones. And then when you bring this group of people together, like, it can be difficult sometimes to pick out what's making what, like what instrument is making what sound. That appeals to you, I assume.
It does. I'm not sure why, Vish, but it just does.
Are you from outer space? Are you from outer space, Nels? I feel like you might be.
I do like the outer space aspect of this and the sort of cosmic mystery that kind of descends along with all the earthbound sort of deep grooves that can happen.
Yeah.
I never really thought about why.
Well,
but
it's sometimes
certainly I like it.
You do things and you don't really think about why sometimes, but since we're having this chat, it just makes me want to home in a little bit on that and your impulses. Uh-huh. Particularly, I know there's also a Brazilian influence. I don't necessarily. I thought maybe Tropicália, but it doesn't. Tropicália is such a strange term to me. It also seems to mean anything. Like, it could be. Obviously connotes an era and sort of a sound, but it's also like, I like the open endedness of it. And
it's open ended for sure.
Yeah.
And it's. I think it's that kind of super colorful and, if you will, like psychedelic creativity of that era in general. You hear how Brazil reacted to the musical developments of rock and roll in the 60s. You know, you hear how they react, blending that with what was going on in Bahia with like all kinds of amazing black musicians and what they were doing to influence Brazilian culture. And there's no doubt that that's very important to me. And I became aware of it at the same time I was becoming aware of Herbie Hancock and Joe Zawinul and Wayne Shorter and Miles and, well, other people too, like John Abercrombie and Ralph Towner and all those people in the 70s that were turning our heads around, Braxton, Leo Smith, Art Ensemble of Chicago, not doing, they were not doing electric music, but I'm just saying that that open-endedness and that amount of creativity and freedom is what informs, I think, all my favorite stuff. And so, yeah, there's a Brazilian influence for sure. And there's Ciro, because Ciro's right in there with that trajectory. And he's just, I don't know if he's a full generation after Ayrto and Doma Mumau and those guys. I think he's about a little bit younger, but definitely coming out of that kind of like kaleidoscopic contribution to the music. He's not just going to sit there and play one hand drum. You know, he basically brings this kind of super ultra vivid psychedelic madness to the mix that is absolutely dreamy to me. It's like I feel like the luckiest man alive that I get to have this element in my music, because it's very hard to find people who can do it, let alone who even know about it, you know?
Yeah. So most of the performances on this record, Share the Wealth, are primarily improvised, correct? But there's at least...
Well, no, there's three improvised pieces. Oh. There's only three.
Oh, yeah. There's only three. Okay, sorry. I thought you came in with just a small number of compositional ideas. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm... I don't want to make it sound like... I didn't feel like I had a lot of fleshed out material, but I wanted to do the Caetano song Segunda that opens the record. Having heard that on the Recanto album that Caetano produced for Gal Costa, she sings the song. It's beautiful. It's
this
simple.
Is Caetano Veloso, yes? Yes, yeah. just for and, people, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I knew I had this piece, which was ended up being called Beam Spiral, the second track on the record. And these are the two videos now, because they asked me to have singles and then have accompanying videos, which is, it was interesting to do in this era. But you could decide to just learn computer animation and do the Beam Spiral video, which she learned it basically, and she worked on it in 3.5 weeks of having just started it, and that's a whole other story, but it's almost 9 minutes long.
Yeah.
So and then the second one, Segunda. So I knew I wanted to do those songs. I had these two ballads that don't even have the whole band playing on them that I wrote, and I don't want to dwell on this, but they were a reaction, not a tribute, to an old friend of mine in Los Angeles who had committed suicide, it was just very shocking and still is.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. So Nightstand and Passed Down were songs written as my sort of coping mechanism, and so I had those. I wrote Ashcan Treasure, this little squib, in the studio, just because I wanted to hear the sound of my dobro with Brian's toy piano. And Headdress was the other song I came in with, which is like, I like to do at least one smooth kind of number. And I realized that, you know, well, that song was just the vibe of that song is really inspired by a couple of, by like Jeff Parker's New Breed stuff and Esperanza Spalding's 12 Little Spells. There's a song on that song cycle of hers that I find so incredibly beautiful and inspiring. And also realized last night we were sitting around and just kind of checking out some favorite videos and songs, just hanging out after dinner. And I realized that the Flying Lotus song called Coronis, the Terminator, is another inspiration for that song Headdress in a way sonically. It's not nearly as dark as Corona the Terminator, but anyway, so those were kind of that was the written material. And then lo and behold, there's this piece I ended up calling, which is improvised, which I ended up calling Stump the Panel, which is the fourth track, which is all of side two. So you know, the improvised pieces, there may be only three of them, but they do take up some bandwidth.
Yeah, you were talking earlier about how CDs are, the compact disc is the improviser's best friend, and it did make me think, yeah, because they can fit a lot of information on them for one thing. So if you're playing, you're not have to worry about, is this going to fit on the side of a record? So that must be part of it too, right?
Well, all my records are too long, except for the Nels Klein 4, when I got the word from, because Blue Note, they license my stuff. I'm not, I don't, necessarily know if I'm going to make a Blue Note record until I do, and usually until I've recorded it. So in the case of the Nels Klein 4, I was basically told, like, this is going to have to be a vinyl length project because don't have the CD be longer than the vinyl. So that was quite a challenge for Mr. Prolix here. and a good one, and a good one. So I was chagrined when I realized that this record was going to be yet another too long record of mine, but such is life.
It's wonderful. It's a beautiful sounding record. We've talked a lot, I think a fair amount, about the music and the, how things came together. I do want to home in on the artwork for a moment, the cover art. Again, I'm waiting for the vinyl to show up, so I can't.
Me too. I haven't gotten it yet.
On my computer, it looks, and on my phone, it seems to be a photograph of a light bulb. Can you tell me a bit about this photograph?
I would love to talk about this. This is a Polaroid taken years ago by my dear friend and comrade in Wilco, Pat Sansone. So Pat is a very aesthetic human and an accomplished photographer. So a few years ago, he had a book of Polaroids come out on a very small edition, recently, I believe, reprinted by somebody maybe slightly more like a real publisher. I don't know how it works. Okay. Yeah. But I wrote the foreword to the book, or the intro, because I have very high regard for what's in that book and for his continued work. And so at one point, I guess it was last year, time flies, but Wilco was on tour and Pat had a show it was in Minneapolis or St. Paul, I can't remember now where the gallery was, but he had a show and he had expanded the images of his Polaroids to larger scale and had an opening at a place that was created just that, you know, it was just open that week. And I went to this and I was once again confronted with this image. And I just thought, like, well, metaphorically speaking, share the wealth. I mean, I thought it was an arresting image, very simple. It's just a wire with an outdoor light bulb and a beautiful cloud filled sky. And I just find it just absolutely, what would the word be? It's like trying to come up with adjectives is always such a pain. Fresh adjectives. It's very leading. It's rife with possibilities as far as like, because it has its own kind of simplicity, but it has all kinds of resonance that's not simple and can go in many different directions for me. So I thought, well, can I make this image work with my album title? And I thought, well, yes, because ultimately it's kind of the light bulb itself is symbolic of illumination, of technology, electricity, and the simplicity of it, and the skies that it makes me think of possibilities. So I just thought, well, I mean, maybe it's a stretch. And I asked him to send a bunch of things he'd been working on, but I just kept going back to that one. And he was really, really happy to have it on there. And the back cover is also Pat Sansone piece. When you get the record, you'll see that it's a layered Polaroids of fireworks, and it's really an abstract image when you see it.
So a lot of light, a lot of illumination. If mm-hmm. I may, I did not attend any kind of art interpretation classes. Well, maybe I did in university, but here's the thing I was thinking. You got the title, Share the Wealth. You've got this sky's the limit thing, as you allude to. The light bulb is also often a symbol of ideas, of invention.
Right.
So I thought maybe that was swimming. And just the whole package made me think, what a great, bold idea.
Cool.
The notion of sharing the wealth. And so that's where I hope this isn't too facile, but that's just kind of where my mind went with it. Again, it's just a little thing on my computer right now. But I feel like when I hold it, because there's a lot of great ideas on this record. It's an ideas record, I feel like, if I may get more heavy-handed about it. And I wondered if that was going on in terms of your interpretation of it.
I mean, certainly, I mean, people have said, like, well, the record's really long and has a lot going on. Is that why you called it Share the Wealth? I'd like to say sure, but it isn't really why.
Yeah.
It's because I was much more interested. I should mention that I wrote a song, brought into the studio a song called Share the Wealth, that we just, I just didn't really want to put it on the record. It was, I should have been a little more vociferous about what I wanted the song to come out like, or maybe I think the song really should be played by like acoustic piano, upright bass drums, and tenor saxophone.
Oh, okay.
No guitar. Oh, and percussion. But anyway.
Maybe this is a song to further the sharing idea. Maybe this is a song you've written for someone else somehow.
Well, maybe I'll try it with the Concentric Quartet. Maybe the singers will attack it, and I'll rework it and try to make it something that can really be ours. But any event, and the song itself, even though it's kind of an odd meter vamp kind of 70s jazz number, it really makes me, like in my mind, I want to hear Pharoah Sanders playing tenor and Joe Bonner on piano and like, I don't know, like Michael Carvin or Jimmy Hopps or somebody on drums, you know, Calvin Hill on bass. Something like that would really make it for me.
Nice. I like that you have a personnel in mind for a piece. That's great. That's awesome. It's also hopeful given how isolated we all are. This is, as we wrap up here, Nels, this is normally where I would ask someone what their plans are. And I know that's a very difficult question, not only for you personally. Well, on some level, yeah. No, actually, yes. Let me not lead us astray. What's going on beyond this as the record gets out in the world? What are you going to do?
Well, normally, of course, this is where I would give you the crazy rundown of all, like, well, gee, I have all this stuff coming up. And of course I don't, but I do have a few things and I have some ideas of what I'd like to do. Certainly, just to be frank with you, the idea of this record having any significance or importance has been pretty much impossible to contemplate as we ramp up to it. And as I am supposed to talk about it in glowing terms, but I also realized recently, especially when the videos came out and the reaction that I'm getting from people to hearing the music and seeing the videos, that people really do want some music and they want something that they like. I don't know. So I'm adjusting. When the record comes out, we won't be able to play any gigs. So, I'll wait as patiently as I can to convene the Nels Klein Singers, the new 6-piece version that lives on two coasts. Very impractical, very impractical. And then we will play as soon as possible. The same goes for the Concentric Quartet with Tom Rainey, Chris Lightcap, Ingrid Laubrock, and me. And I will attempt to document the music I've been writing, get together, like we'll socially distance ourselves from each other and maybe go to Eli Cruz's studio and put Ingrid in an ISO booth that no one can get near and try to see what happens with that music. And in the meantime, I will start plugging away on some new Cup material. She's got a few other irons in the fire, and I've got a few tracks to do here and there for people, mostly just for my friends, you know, and they're not paying gigs or whatever. It's just cool stuff for nice people. And I have a task, an assignment to accomplish in February of next year with the composer in Brooklyn named Douglas Cuomo. And he's written a piece for me and a string quartet that we have to try to record with any luck, also virtually perform for some universities around the country.
Oh, okay.
So that's really the only thing I have that would look on the calendar like a gig.
Sounds like a fair amount of stuff, as always, Nels. Like I thought you were going to be like, I got nothing, and now that was...
Well, you know, and then, I've been encouraged to at least record casually, or informally, I should say, not casually, some solo guitar work, which I think I might do, even because it's so terrifying for me and so difficult. But I just did some solo stuff the other night on our live stream, playing without any effects whatsoever. That's the challenge. Besides everything, I find it terrifying. But I'd like to actually maybe just record a few things, and just to have and then maybe some overdub stuff too, which just me as the one man psychedelic orchestra, which is what I like the most. But then, you know, next summer we've got Wilco Tour on the books, and we'll see if that can happen.
Yeah, I've seen people planning those things. And I think I will say, Nels, when you people like you release records, I know you were saying like it's hard to even get into the spirit sometimes of, you know, being enthused about a record given all that's going on in the world. But I will say that these things you make and produce are hopeful beacons for people like us who are, you say, yeah, people seem into it, into the videos. It makes it feel normal. Like, it makes it feel like, okay, like the human spirit is alive. It's, and that is exemplified by Nels Klein Singers putting out this double record. This gives me a lift, you know? And I know that that's been the case for me, and I'm sure I'm not alone. So I hope that resonates with you.
I really appreciate that, Vish, and it does. And I am psyched about the record. I won't lie about that.
Yeah.
It's just like the question that dogs me is it important?
Yeah.
You know? So, and so I've had a lucky life, you know? I mean, I have been able to play music that I like my whole life. And no, not wasn't always lucrative. That didn't matter. You know, I just got to play music I like, and that's why I still love music and playing music. It's all I want to do. It's all I wanted to do since I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
So for it to have any resonance or have and be inspiring or give solace or whatever is a wonderful thing to hear. And I have to say that music and art basically saved my life. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. why wouldn't it help someone else? You know, I can be logical when I have to be.
Yeah. It's a rational thing to wonder about, but don't say past tense either. Don't say I had a good life. I played a lot of great. There's more to come. There's lots more to come.
I'm sorry. Hey, you're supposed to be the morbid guy.
I'm supposed to be morbid. I 180'd. If people want to learn more about you and this record, Share the Wealth, is there somewhere on the internet that you would prefer to direct them to right now, Nels?
Apparently, I still have a website, but I haven't looked at it in years.
Okay.
It's probably going to have some information up there, and you know, nelsklein.com. It's probably got whatever you need. But you can also, for the new stuff, you can go to bluenote.com and find me.
Okay, and you're on some social media things. People can follow you and.
I don't see any of that stuff. But it's out there. I'm sure that there's my name associated with Instagram and Facebook. So,
okay.
But I don't.
You're not the one engaging with that. Okay. I got it.
I'm not. I have really, really nice people who keep track of stuff like that and ask me to post things. Which generally sounds self-serving because they're like, hey, I have a gig tonight. Come on down. Or hey, buy my new record. Whoa. You know, every once in a while I add my voice to the noise and just when I can't take it anymore and I say something sociopolitical, I guess. But for the most part, I'm just not seeing that stuff. It's too many voices for me and I guess I'm a wimp.
No, it's fair. We're all getting a bit tired of virtual life, I'm sure, and have been for sometimes. It's vexing and taxing, and it's contributed to this fissure, this disconnect. Like, it's weird. We're more connected and more disconnected. And anyway, that's a whole other morbid conversation. If we can go out on a song from the new album, Nels, I'm hoping, first of all, that you will pick one. And if so, if you can sort of explain why it came to mind. Is that something you can do?
Even though I didn't write it, I would say the opening track, Segunda, comes to mind, not just because this video just emerged and so I actually listened to it and a few times, but because it's kind of like introduction to the orchestra. It has some nice exchanges, round robin and solo exchanges between me and Brian and Skarik. And Ciro's in there with his jaw harp and his voice and... But there's also a kind of, it has a cathartic quality. It's a nice drone piece. And I think that it has a kind of a lift to it that's neither happy or sad. It's like there's something about it that has all of the, the complexities of various emotions and also a simple, direct musical content. So I guess like, let's go for that. Scott and Trevor are in there just in a very supportive role on this, as opposed to contributing all kinds of electronic madness along with their grooves. So it's just as opposed to say Beam Spiral, which we were discussing earlier, It has a video attached to it. This is just a live jam, and Beam Spiral is a little more produced. I did a little overdubbing to flesh out the guitar tones, and so it was much more of a mixing challenge. There's a lot going on that piece. Yeah. It's pretty orchestrated. This is just a good old jam.
Okay, let's go out on that. This is Segunda from the new album, Share the Wealth, by the Nels Klein Singers. Nels, it's always such a thrill to get speak with you. Thank you so much.
Likewise.
Best of luck with everything in the future.
Great to see you, man. Enjoy Edmonton.
I'll try.
Stay warm.
I'm trying.
Okay. Much love to you. Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Very nice to have Nels Klein back on the show. He's been, when was he on? I don't remember. He was on a long time ago. He might have been on first year or something. Anyway, he's back this time for the 579th episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available on, well, basically everywhere you get your podcasts. It's Apple, Google, Spotify, all of the practical but somewhat, if not completely evil things, but still it's there. You can get the podcast on all of the podcast platforms, and I hope you will, and maybe you'll subscribe to it. That's always good. If you hit your follow or subscribe button, that helps the show somehow. I don't know. Maybe it just helps those companies. I don't know if I get... Well, I mean, I guess it helps more people find out about the show. You know, by the 579th episode, I should know what the things do. If you can, follow and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. If you can't find an episode of the show that you heard about and you're looking for it, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit my website, vishkhanna.com. Also, you can like Creative Control on Facebook if you want. I'm presuming Facebook will be dismantled soon. Maybe it's gone by the time you're listening to this. But if for now, you can follow the show on Facebook. Follow the show on Twitter. Still going Twitter, I think. At Vish Creative, or follow me at Vish Khanna. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast going. If you donate $6 or more, and many of you do, which is very kind, you get access to exclusive audio content. Maybe I'll go digging for like one of the first times I ever interviewed Nels, because that's how we know each other. I talked to him many, many years ago before he was in Wilco, and he's always been such a sweet guy. Anyway, maybe I'll find that, put that up there for fun. I'm always self-conscious about those old audio archives because I'm not great. Maybe I'm not great now, but I feel even like I was less great then. I was learning how to do this. Anyway, I'll dig around. Patreon.com/creativecontrol to support the show. Thanks again to liveatmasseyhall.com, where you can watch beautifully captured concerts by great Canadian artists. Also, Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to my friend Jim Guthrie for lending me some music for the program. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode with Nels Klein, and for maybe telling your friends about this episode and maybe other episodes. It's always helpful to spread the word about Creative Control. And I hope to send you a new episode very soon. I will talk to you very soon, as I say. Bye for now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.